Gilles Deleuze's 1962 manuscript, Nietzsche and Philosophy, offers a unique interpretation of the work of Friedrich Nietzsche. More generally, Deleuze's use of Nietzsche's concepts has left a bold impression on the world of Nietzsche scholarship and philosophy more broadly. This series of videos provides snapshots of key concepts featured in the various chapters of Nietzsche and Philosophy. This first video covers Deleuze's preface to the English translation, which he addresses to translator Hugh Tomlinson. One reason for the preface's importance is that Deleuze provides a concise thumbnail sketch of his project, outlining his own nuanced view of Nietzsche's writings. My goal in this first video is a modest one. I will recast the ideas outlined in the preface to clarify them. In doing so, I hope to provoke interest in the text itself and in Deleuze's work more generally. In future videos, I hope to plumb more deeply into the specific ideas covered in each chapter of Nietzsche and Philosophy. In any case, let's get started. In Nietzsche and Philosophy, Deleuze sets out to do three things. Arguably, Deleuze's primary goal in Nietzsche and Philosophy is to construct a theory of forces using a battery of concepts that Nietzsche himself develops across his own work. As readers of Nietzsche might already be aware, Nietzsche casts himself as philosophy's leading diagnostician of various problems throughout the historical evolution of Western culture and thought. In The Genealogy of Morals, for example, Nietzsche shows how the birth of Western monotheisms fostered the growth of a moral conscience that gave rise to what he calls reactive power. This form of power rivals a more primordial active power, unencumbered by the weight of things like guilt, bad conscience, and ressentiment, Nietzsche's notable concept of resentment and its related ethical complexities. Deleuze observes that the forces articulated in Nietzsche's view of morality operate widely in various forms of contestation in multiple domains. In other words, these forces not only undergird the history of human moral development, but, for Deleuze, manifest in every phenomenon in the cosmos. Deleuze's insights into Nietzsche's concepts of active and reactive power lead him to create a metaphysics which articulates a typology of forces. Deleuze's Nietzschean theory of forces then becomes useful for understanding various phenomena, from the micro-organic to the macro-political. In the preface, Deleuze expresses his interest in understanding the vast array of propositions we use to describe states of affairs against this theory of forces. He claims that narrative accounts about ourselves and our world derive from a complex host of antagonisms. It is through these disparate and often subpersonal social and organic pressures that our collective and individual utterances get their sense and value. This will be something to probe in another discussion. Secondly, for Deleuze, understanding the legacy of Nietzsche involves unpacking Nietzsche's discovery of two great philosophical concepts: the will to power, and the eternal return. It is almost impossible to have an exhaustive understanding of these concepts without delving into Nietzsche's own writing. However, one of Deleuze's strengths as a philosopher and writer is the concision with which he introduces Nietzsche's most prominent ideas, and I hope to capture a bit of that here. There's a certain interpretation of the will to power put forward by some readers of Nietzsche, and it is a reading that we sometimes learn through osmosis, as old Nietzsche's name gets bandied about. Often, the will to power is thought of in terms of achieving power, a power which someone or something lacks. In this view, power becomes the object of a representation. One force dominates another and exacts from the object something deprived in the former, namely, the recognition of the dominant force by the weaker one. Deleuze comes down on this view pretty hard as a bad reading of the concept. Instead, what is called the will to power might also be called the will of power for Deleuze. The will to power better denotes the expression of a power typified by the force itself. Earlier, we alluded to Nietzsche's distinction between active and reactive forces. In a subsequent video, we'll discuss more deeply the nature of this distinction. But for the time being, we'll simply say that active forces refer to a creative force, unimpeded or unlimited by the strictures of what, in a very broad sense, we can call judgment. Reactive forces, on the other hand, are overladen with what Nietzsche calls bad conscience and ressentiment, two related dispositions where the force of guilt reigns, rendering a force or a set of forces impotent to act outside the constraints of judgment. Deleuze endeavors to overcome a common understanding of another of Nietzsche's concepts, the eternal return. A dominant reading of the view goes like this. Time is but an infinite circle, and the forward thrust of time's arrow ultimately means the return of every arrangement of matter in its identical form, to the extent that we will all be forced to live every moment of our life again and again, just as it was for all eternity. In this reading, the character of the ethical challenge we face is defined by whether we can affirm every one of those identical moments with a resounding yes. Deleuze challenges the very basis of this formulation using various textual support from Nietzsche himself to suggest that that which returns is not the same, but difference itself. For Deleuze, the identical can never exhaust repetition, as a deeper current of difference propels repetition's inherent cyclicality. Amidst the eternal return, two registers of the will will always return to us, both of which are typified by forms of difference. The first is what Deleuze calls the will of that which wills the eternal return itself. In other words, that which would will an infinitude of repetitions remains opposed to that which would either only half-heartedly will an event once and only once, or that which would deny the eternal return altogether. The second aspect of willing the eternal return involves the affirmation of only that which becomes, or becomings themselves. The problem with the notion of the eternal return privileging the identical is that it belies the difference intrinsic to the becomings of the eternal return. The eternal return is a force of ongoing and constant transmutation, one constantly perforating the boundaries of everything recognized as identical. Put another way, the eternal return is an active force which overcomes the reactive force of recognition in its many expressions. Throughout Nietzsche and philosophy, the deprioritizing of recognition in its relation to the will to power cashes out in various ways for a Deleuzian ethics. For example, though a tyrant or a despot may express power in the conventional sense, the kind of power they manifest depends largely on the recognition of their power by those that they have put under their boot. For Deleuze, the despot in fact becomes the first victim of their own despotism, partly since their power relies upon confirming loyalties and curtailing those forces which resist the tyrant's hegemony. Moreover, and perhaps more familiar to our own lives, we experience the low power of recognition in those situations in which we desire to be desired, or when we crave the validation of others. In short, the force of recognition keeps us firmly bounded within the image of another's judgment or a system of judgment. This too we'll discuss in another video. Lastly, in his book, Deleuze credits Nietzsche with what he believes to be one of Nietzsche's most important contributions to philosophy, the overturning of what Deleuze terms the image of thought. In brief, the image of thought refers to the way thought has been grounded in a set of traditional or dogmatic presuppositions. When Deleuze goes after the image of thought, he attacks a set of persistent tendencies and notions latent within the historical practice of philosophical inquiry. One of these ideas is that the form of philosophy itself is singular in its character. Considering what Deleuze believes about the eternal return, even our concept of thought, or our concept of philosophy, cannot remain self-identical. Deleuze expounds this idea by drawing into dialogue a set of diverse philosophical mediators, using the work of Immanuel Kant, Henri Bergson, and Nietzsche himself. Deleuze claims that the fundamental intuition which guides thinking can never find full or adequate expression in our finite conceptual creations. However, concepts, too, have their own becomings and reach their own critical thresholds. At the cusp of these thresholds, thought transforms when we create novel concepts and construct new problematics. Now, I know for some that this might already be a lot packed into a very short amount of time, My point here was to prepare the potential reader of Nietzsche and philosophy for their philosophical journey, or perhaps at least generate some interest in the book for someone mulling over whether to take a stab at it. In any event, as of August 2023, Asset Horizon will be starting a new Nietzsche and Philosophy reading group on our Patreon account. Navigate to the links below to join us or click on the video above to find out more. Okay, thanks for watching.